Stay Bored.
Welcome back to Stay Bored, a board game review podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Zerfus, and I'm joined today by
Bradley Kvokovich. It's a pleasure to be here, Aaron.
Thank you. We are connected via Zoom, so you're not with me, but...
Well, I mean, metaphorically.
Yes, metaphorically. So, Brad, what game are we reviewing this time?
Today, we are going to review Betrayal at House on the Hill, which is one of my all-time favorites. It's a very unique board game.
Yeah? How did you first come upon this scary game?
It was, I think, sometime in college, so about, like, 5 or so years ago. How old am I? I don't know. But I was at a friend's house and he busted this one out, and it was just such a interesting game, kind of unlike stuff that I'd played before, that I literally went out and bought it the next day and brought it back and played it many times since then.
So Brad, why don't you give us like the little game introduction, straight from the box, would you?
Sure, I'd be happy to. In Betrayal at House on the Hill, each player chooses an explorer to investigate a creepy old house. As you explore the house, you discover new rooms. Each time you enter a new room, you might find something, or something might find you. Explorers change over the course of the game, for better or for worse, depending on how they deal with the house's surprises. The house is different each time you build it. At some random point during the game, one explorer will trigger a scenario called a haunt. When the haunt is revealed, one explorer becomes a traitor, bent on defeating his or her former companions. The rest of the explorers become heroes, struggling to survive. From then on, the game is a fight between the traitor and the heroes, often to the death. The game has 50 haunts, and each one tells a different story. All are yours to explore as you live or die in the house on the hill.
So Bradley, why don't you go over kind of just like the format and kind of how the general structure of the game, like how is it laid out?
Yeah, so you enter in the entryway of this house as different explorers, and you pick which explorer you are based on these character tokens that exist in the game, each with different stats or attributes for your character. So some will be a little faster than others, some will be stronger than others. And you take turns moving up to your speed value around this house, which when it starts, it's just the entryway. That's all you know, because you are on a team exploring this house at the beginning, or at least you aren't against each other yet. So you go out the doorways, and as you go out the doorways, you pick a room tile from the stack of tiles that is provided with the game. And so that's where in the overview you heard that it's going to be different every single time. That's something I love about this game. It's always fresh, always unique. You could go into a hallway right away, or a kitchen, or something more ominous that isn't in the game clue. and inside those rooms, there will be different icons on the rooms that'll trigger events to happen. You'll pick these either event cards or item cards. You can get some stuff that'll help you later on. Or omen cards. And omens are the kind of mysterious parts that start eventually will trigger that haunt phase that was talked about in the overview. Every time you trigger an omen, you have to roll the dice to beat the number of omens that have been found so far. So it gets harder and harder as the game goes on, and eventually someone will trigger the haunt to start to get into the second phase of the game. So another reason why it's so unique, you'll start out on a team and then all of a sudden the game just completely changes. One person becomes the traitor and your objectives are flipped. So everybody, rather than being on a team, being explorers together, all of a sudden you figure out exactly how you can win the game. And along with that, the 50 different scenarios are another thing that keeps the game really fresh, where in addition to the house being different every time, your scenario of what the traitor is trying to do, sometimes they're trying to kill everybody, sometimes they're controlling monsters to kill everybody, sometimes they're not trying to kill everybody, they're just trying to move things around the house. There's a lot of different things that could be happening, but it's always going to be a little different. Even if you play the same haunt multiple times, the layout of the house could be different, which could make it a different game.
So there's some spooky, like, home renovations going on, like, ooh, the house on the hill. I'm going to move a couch around.
Yeah, it's not a quite Extreme Makeover Home Edition with like ghouls, but it's meant to be a little bit of it's all horror based. So on the cards, you could pick up an event card that a skeleton jumps out and attacks you or something like that. You have to fight it back. There's a bunch of just random things that could happen in this house based on the room you're on or what events you're on.
Brad, do you think you could go over like a sample haunt scenario?
Sure. There's a bunch of different ones that you can do. I think one that I always remember is one of the first ones that I did when I was the trader. And so this will be a little bit of a spoiler. It'll spoil one of the haunt scenarios for people because it's kind of fun to have them come up organically. But just to give you a sense of what can happen in the game, there was a time when someone triggered the haunt. And so you read the book. There's little booklets that contain the haunt scenarios. You don't have video, so you can't see me holding it up right now.
Yeah.
But you figure out through that booklet who the traitor is. And I was the traitor. And so you go off into two separate rooms. The traitor will go and read their instructions. And then the remaining players will read the heroes, if you will read their instructions. And for this one, it was called something along the lines of Invisible, the Invisible Man or the Invisible Traitor or something like that. And so it worked where I don't remember the exact objective of this, but I know that I got to take my character token off of the board when I returned. And I had to choose, I chose a starting room that I wrote down. And then I'd write down every subsequent turn of where I was in the house. And they wouldn't be able to tell where I was, but I'd make things happen when I was in those rooms. And whether it was attacking people or moving things around, like just different items that I had to bring. Like sometimes you have to bring like the crystal skull to the pentagram chamber. Like that's kind of corny, but it's a real thing in the haunt that could happen. And I basically had to move around and do what I was doing without them figuring out where I was and attacking the room that had me in it. Cause they could try to attack different rooms for this invisible traitor. And if they found the one I was in, they would actually be able to do damage to me. So that was one haunt that I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. So you were the ghost furniture mover. You were out there. Like, they're like, this love seat would probably look better in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, why does this keep happening?
I know. The poor
punching air.
Move everything around again. Housekeeping really hates it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Brad, for like strategy for, you know, people just starting out with the game, like one piece of advice you would give them to help them start out, like what's one thing you wish you knew when you first started playing?
Sure. So, as I've played this game, you begin to realize that it's not the most strategic game and it's a lot of just kind of randomness happening because you don't know what room you're going to get into. You don't know what item or event is going to be triggered when you get in that room. And you could just get absolutely demolished right from the beginning. I once played a game with a friend of ours who within the first few turns had, I forget what creature jumped out and bit him. And then he walked into a room full of junk and tripped and died before the haunt started, which I think is actually not supposed to be allowed because they never thought that that would happen, but he found a way. So a lot of chaotic stuff can happen in this game. So I won't pretend like it's the most strategic game in the world. I would just say to strap in and enjoy the ride. But one thing I would recommend is in the first half of the game, not really half, but the first portion of the game, the main focus should be trying to up your attributes if you can, because as I said, you have like your different speed and your strength. There's also not a sanity and knowledge. And if at any point any of those hit zero, you're going to die or hit the skull on your board. But you can move them up and down throughout the game based on the things that happen in the rooms. So if you can find ways to up those attributes in the first half of the game, that is going to be really helpful for you going forward. So there's going to be rooms around that will allow you to up your attributes, kind of like the library and the gymnasium. If you find those rooms in the house, I'd highly recommend using them because they can make it a lot easier. And if you get down in the basement by yourself, good luck.
What would say is your like favorite aspect? What makes Betrayal at House on the Hill, which is a long name, kind of stand out a bit?
It's a little long, a little verbose, but I kind of hit on this a little earlier, but just the uniqueness of every single time that you play the game. If you're playing something like, Catan, for instance, it's the first one I see on my shelf right now. You pretty much know the formula that is going to happen. Like the board layout will be a little bit different every time, but this general strategy of it, the things that you're doing in the game will be a little bit more repetitive than something like Betrayal. Whereas this game, because the house is always different and because in the first part of the game, you don't even know what you're going to need to do in the second half. Like it might be really helpful to have a ton of knowledge and you could have picked a really stupid character. Just straight up. So you could just be kind of out of luck. But if you're just along for the ride and not knowing what's going to happen and just embracing how like silly and unique it can be, then it's a really fun game. And there is some strategy to it. It's fun to work together to take down the traitor at the end if you're on the team of heroes. And if you're the traitor trying to kill all your friends, that can also be fun too. So I would say that uniqueness, the replayability, and I know that there's expansions you can get. If you do get through all the 50 haunts and you're starting to replay them, you can buy an expansion that has even more.
Do you have like a least favorite part of this game, or like what would you want changed?
Yeah, I'd say the one part that can get a little bit, it's not my favorite necessarily, is the other side of that coin. That it's not the most strategically intensive game. So if you're looking for something that you really can like outwit your other players to win, you won't necessarily get that. Sometimes you'll just draw a bad hand, go into some bad rooms, have some bad things happen to you, and you'll be out of the game. So if you're looking for something that's really strategy based and feeling like doing something heavy like that, this isn't going to be the game for you. So sometimes I wish when I'm playing that it was a little bit less randomness, but as I alluded to earlier, it's also the charm to the game. So you just kind of got to take it for what it is and leave the rest aside.
The ghost giveth, the ghost taketh away.
Just like the couch.
Just like the couch. All right, Brad. Last thing that we have going on right now is a very unique ranking system for the game. So you're going to give it like a dice roll. So obviously a pair of sixes is very good. Also a pair of ones could be pretty good too. You know, everything's different. So how would you, if you were to roll two dice, what would Betrayal House on the Hill be?
Okay. So the dice for Betrayal, you can't see them, but I'm holding them up, have zeros, ones and twos on them. And so if you roll a double zero, you're probably going to get mauled by that, spider, I don't know, whatever. Spider is a bad example. You don't get mauled by a spider.
It'd be a big spider if you just say a giant spider.
Yeah, you're getting bitten by that giant spider for sure, and you're getting some bad things happening to you. But if you roll double twos, there's a much better chance that good things will happen to you.
You won't like the spider.
I don't think that's going to help you much. But if you're into that sort of thing, it could do that. I am going to go ahead and give it that unique ranking then of double twos, because I don't think a lot of games are going to get ranked double twos. I think if you take it where it's at, it's a super fun ride and totally recommend playing it. So I give it double two.
The best possible.
Wow. The best possible.
All right, Brad. Well, thank you so much for coming in on Zoom. Looks anytime. Like you got some eagles behind you. You got a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, I hear that they have some pretty cool calls. I'll be listening for those.